You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
I feel I'm in the dwarf tour. Well, you know, since it's such
you're like the little kid at the table.
I am the little kid at the table.
One of the first things that we always talk about at every podcast is we're sitting in my garage again.
But we're not sitting in your garage this time.
Right.
We're in Kevin's garage.
The old dipsy do. Welcome.
How about
welcome.
That?
Welcome.
I know that like our listening audience has been riveted like since we started the show.
Yes.
Like, where are they?
Some guy just
we're about a mile and a half away, actually.
He's just got a series of notches.
Somebody's keeping score somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. It's
gonna be on our Wikipedia
it's
page.
Like two
someday.
Really nerdy guys that they're like waiting and one of them guesses Kevin's garage and one of them guesses.
They've got
like,
money riding on it.
It's like yeah.
God damn it.
Hey, here's a question. What's the saddest thing you've ever talked about? Here's something. Yeah, so we are in my garage. It's kind of an ambient lit show tonight, so this may be a little chill.
What were you like? Kevin's like, well, I think it's gonna be an ambient show. And this is before you got here, Ryan. And Mark's like, well, we're not gonna actually talk about anything. We're just gonna make like relaxing music,
murmuring noises.
Yeah. Be like going to an Enya concert. Sure. Yeah, yeah, I like it.
Songs from garages or for garages. All right, blew that one. Great.
Anyway, so yeah, so we're back at my place. Welcome everybody. And it's been a little while since we've had an opportunity to get together. So,
well, I'll tell you what.
I see you all
weeks.
Look taller.
Why don't we play some music, get into that, and let's talk about what we've been doing the last 2 weeks, because something came and went in the interim since last we recorded. That this a small kind of a small thing in the world of entertainment.
Oh, I know.
It happens in Austin, right?
Okay.
SXSW
puppet show or something?
Yes, something like that. Okay, but anyway, I'm Shane.
Ryan,
Kevin,
and Mark.
Somebody likes it.
So what's was, been happening?
It wasn't a puppet show. That
South by Southwest.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I've heard about that.
That thing. Mm-hmm. Well, in keeping with us, I think we gave our pre-South by Southwest show like 2 weeks before it started, or one at least a week before, and now we're going to give our wrap-up. I guess these episodes are going to go up like 2 months afterward, but we should talk about it since it's still
I did virtually
fresh.
Nothing except for attended Kevin and Mark's event.
How did that go? 20 by 2.
It went great.
It was a really good one. I've been to almost all of them.
Yeah. And thanks, Ray. No, it was fun. We had a good group and had a guy on who had, well, we won't spend a lot of time on this, but had a guy, like everybody from a dude that who writes for Conan, who's won 5 Emmy Awards, used to write for The Daily Show, to Sarah Hickman, who was I always learned little nuggets as we're going through that show, but she was the official state musician of Texas after Willie, but before Lyle. So
that's heady company.
Yeah. So anyway, and lots of other people who are really interesting. I thought Jesse Sublett, who's an Austin musician who used to be in a punk band in the late 70s called the Skunks, who now is a like crime novelist who writes about
he was solid
or yeah. Non-fiction writer who writes about like Austin's mafia period in the 1960s, which is really crazy. Anyway, it was a good show. Thank you guys for coming who did, and thanks for asking about it.
What was the question this year?
The question is, where were you then? So, yeah, there were a lot of...
Oh, yeah, can
for those that aren't aware of what we're talking about.
The concept of...
20x2.org.
One question, 20 speakers, 2 minutes each.
Yeah, so we give people a really fuzzy question, and they get the question when they're recruited, and then they can come at it in any way they want for 2 minutes before a live audience.
I've seen people come at things in very interesting ways. I've done it before.
Yes. There was no Meow Mix song.
That was the first
one. That was
first
the first one.
First show ever, wasn't
16
it?
16 years ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so what you know, the great thing about doing that show as part of the interactive part of South by Southwest, we kind of get it over with pretty early, and we still have an opportunity to enjoy a little bit of the nerd side and then some of film and music too. So we will talk a little bit about some of the music stuff tonight, and probably for sure, and then
well,
probably
I'm
a little
guessing
bit of right
that's
now.
Why you picked this particular artist.
I mean, it is.
We don't have to
but
get
we'll,
into
yeah,
it
we'll
yet,
talk
but,
we'll talk more about that momentarily. But anyway, yeah, I saw some stuff that I thought was really cool. And I think the last time that we got together, I mentioned that for whatever reason, that's just my own weird circadian rhythms. It's like, I always love music, but I'm not always in this place of like, I can't wait to discover something new. And I'm really excited about that. Like the possibility of discovering something that I like being open to it. And it just, this year, they coincided. I had a harmonic convergence.
Literally, nice, I hear.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, yeah, no, I found a lot of stuff that I really thought was cool. And Shane, you played out a little bit during South by, right?
Yeah. I had a busy week.
Yeah.
I saw some good stuff, but most of it, for whatever random reason, like, tended to be from here. But people I hadn't seen in a while. I saw Mike Boer.
Oh, nice. Mutual friend. I run into him a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm. He was great. His new band is great. I saw Willie Nelson for the first time.
I hear which he's good.
Yeah. He's coming up.
Up and comer.
Yeah. He's going to make up. It, that guy.
Well, I had never seen him before, and
I still haven't. Actually.
And it was totally worth it. And it was at the Spotify party. There were not even 250 people there.
So that's totally amazing. Worth that's... it. Was there some sort of sacrifice that you had to make in order to see him?
Worth the wait.
I'm
for
saying worth the
40
wait.
Years.
Worth the time. Yeah. Worth the time.
Well, if you're not,
you got the time.
And it's kind of a pain in the ass.
If I have the money, honey, he's got the time.
Yeah, you're not in Austin during that time of year, kind of what these guys are alluding to is that that there are, I don't know, at any given time, probably 20, 30 day parties going on that play
more than that, because there's also parties in people's yards and stuff.
Sure.
Where there's pretty big, like, cookout parties and stuff, where there's pretty big bands, you know, relatively speaking.
Well, and maybe I'm just talking about mostly the stuff in proximity to, like, downtown and the east side.
I'd say 50.
Yeah. But lots, where you just sort of have to resign yourself that you're, like, somewhere, like, in a lot of places, there's something really cool that I'd be really excited about seeing that I'm just going to have to miss because my body can only be in one place at one time. But if you get to see...
Well, and a lot of the bands that come in town play out, like, 9 shows or something during the week.
Yeah, I think Heinz played 16 or 17 shows.
I think I heard that on Sound Opinions.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the point being is, like, if the one place that your body could be at that time was seeing Willie Nelson with a crowd of 250, like...
You picked right.
Yeah, that's where I needed to be.
That's a check on the list right there.
It was badass.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Anything else that you guys want to cover about South By before? I don't remember a lot of it. Yeah, well, sure.
I kind of consciously just didn't deal with it
this
year. I just needed a break away from it.
One other little sort of separate thing that I wanted to mention is the passing of Gary Shandling. Which happened we recorded last, which was a bummer.
Big time.
And like, if you're wondering if the guy was still on point, go catch the last episode that he was in of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Which you and I watched like maybe 2 weeks or so before he died.
Yeah. You forget like sort of that. He had a very oblique way of looking at things, and was always a fun listen. And when Ryan and I were growing up, kind of soaking up as much stand up as we could, he was one of the guys who was out there sort of front and center. And then we won't sidebar on all the Larry Sanders stuff.
It's just, you know, I was a little bit of a comedy nerd. I alluded to this on Facebook, and I would tape all of the late night stand ups I'd see. And he had several segments on it, and they were just some of the best ones.
Without giving away too much, there is a really great segment in that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee where he and Seinfeld get to talking about McConaughey doing car commercials after he won an
Oscar.
Academy Award. Yeah. And he was like, there really needs to be a comedian in the other seat. And so he was doing Jerry while Jerry was doing McConaughey, and it's amazing. It's amazing. Anyway, check that out. But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
We're here to talk about some lady.
Yeah. So like I said, I had a chance to roll around in some music before South By rolled up this year, and was pretty.
I assume this woman was in town.
She was in town.
I say woman, she's like barely a woman.
Well, we'll get into that too. But yeah, she She was on the she was one of the ones who was listed as a NPR put out a list of 100 artists that they think you should check out every South by, and usually it's pretty hit or miss, but I found a few things on there I like, and her, the single that they had on for her was very different than anything else that was on the 100. And then just as it, and again, for people who don't know, like, part of the strategy for getting to go see bands at day parties is you just RSVP for as much shit as you can, know that you're going to miss most of it, and then try to, my strategy is usually I just try to find something that I can actually get into that I'm on the list for, and they don't always even check the list. But it just so happened that, like, I had really one full afternoon to just go catch as much shit as I could. One thing that I did was I drank a Mexican beer at the Canadian Day party on St. Patrick's Day, which I thought was pretty amazing.
Your little contribution to international culture.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And then like five guys from the UN showed up. That was unexpected. But anyway, and not true. But the
what?
Other I know. I made it up. But the other thing that happened was I wandered down to Flamingo Cantina. And
the local reggae
it's
club.
A reggae club.
It's a reggae club. Their doorman's a complete asshat. If you're listening to it, it's Flamingo Cantina doorman, you are an asshat. But but beyond that, Under the Radar magazine was doing a day party there, and it was pretty sparsely attended by the time that I showed up. And I guess the act that was supposed to close out that afternoon, because South by Southwest does a deal where they allow these day parties to exist for free and for bands to get out and play as much as they want, but they have to shut down by 6 o'clock because a lot of times the official showcases start at 7. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so everybody's rushing to get this last set in, and whoever it was that was going to play from 5 to 6 canceled. And so they put two bands in there, and Julian Baker was the second act. And so she just played, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. And it was just a handful of songs off this record. But I did get to see her, like, by just dumb fucking luck.
Yeah.
And she was terrific. And so I had been kicking around the idea, knowing that I had to pick a record anyway, that I wanted to do something new. And I also just wanted to pick something lighthearted and fun.
Oh, well, the success.
You know, I was... like a Go-Go's record.
Yeah, I got to say about this Julian Baker record. By the way, that is her name, Julian Baker. I have to say
Julian
that,
with an E.
With an
way.
E. Like yeah. Julie with an N.
Yeah.
Julianne.
She's not carrots.
No, she is not. I will have to say this about this album. Definitely, I cannot see having a party record this year that's going to trump this one. No. I mean, I know it's early in the year, but I don't think.
See, that really cut kind of like an Iron Maiden meets Rage Against the Machine kind of thing.
It's
from it.
Yes, that's interesting because for me it was more like if you took CNC Music Factory. Well, I mean, just CNC Music Factory.
Well, predominantly that, but like little Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Sure. Okay, if you cross CNC Music Factory, Casey the Sunshine, that is great. Great. Yeah, Parliament Funkadelic.
Yeah.
So if
Frank
you're,
Sinatra.
If you're wondering, it sounds
up,
nothing
ass,
like
all
any.
Going on the floor.
Yeah. Mark's just like, cut. Anyway, but
keep,
it doesn't.
Keep.
Yeah, she doesn't sound any, obviously doesn't sound anything like those acts. And
she doesn't really sound like anybody. I mean, they're influences that
I they're influences for sure.
You know, touchstones, but she doesn't really sound like anybody.
Yeah, no, I thought that was the way that I interpreted it as well. I will say one other thing, which is that apparently she's like a junior at Middle Tennessee State University.
That is correct.
And the attendance policy must be really lax at Middle Tennessee State because she's on the road like all the time. Like,
yeah. Well, she's been written up in the New York Times, and like Stereo Gum did a piece. Yeah. And
she was AV Club had her. I read about that's the first place I read about her last year.
She's been written up. Yeah.
Yes,
Mark and I kind of went to the same sad place on that. Anyway, so yeah.
I mean, I'll chime in with. I do think that she sounds a lot like early Sarah Jaffe stuff.
I could see that.
Sure. Well, I want to share one little nugget. So, like. To your point, Shane, or what you mentioned, there have been lots of really terrific write-ups. And one of the things that I noticed about people who have canvassed this album is that it seems like very few of these reviews are paint-by-number throwaway reviews like we see sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. And Pitchfork got out in front of this one, which is like kind of unheard of.
You kind of have, if you listen to this record more than once, you kind of have to, if you like it, you want to cradle that wounded bird.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, totally.
Like, you have a personal connection to it, I think.
Yeah.
I
so mean, let me read you the quick first paragraph from the Pitchfork review written by Ian Cohen, who said, if Julian Baker wasn't crackling something close to a smile on the cover of Sprained Ankle, I wouldn't be certain that it was meant for public consumption. Much of the album, after it was written in isolation, after Baker left Memphis for Middle Tennessee State University, she worked on these songs in a soundproof booth within the campus music building. It was recorded at Richmond Space Bomb Studios, a destination du jour that birthed lusciously orchestrated Countrypolitan Records for Matthew E. White and Natalie Prass this year. But one mic and one take songs could have easily been tracked in an MTSU bathroom. Listening to it can occasionally feel like a violation of her privacy. And I was like, that actually, like, well, especially, you know, the last line.
Well,
the
guy, okay, well, hang on. The guy who actually produced this was an intern there. Yeah. Like, it's not even, I mean, like, it's getting to be, like, kind of a well-known record. It's probably going to make his reputation. But
it doesn't sound lo-fi. The production's great.
It's
really sparse. I mean, it's a lot of it is just her and an acoustic guitar, but then sometimes, you know, where those toms come in with the mallets, and there's
there are moments in this that sound almost like Band of Horses, but a little more stripped down. Or like a female Jeff
Buckley. There's some First Aid Kit stuff that, just a little sadder and without the harmonies. You know, sometimes, honestly, Ryan, it sort of sounds like a sadder, a little more, quite a bit more morose Sundays without the rest of the band.
Yeah, no, I can.
And she's got kind of a swooping thing that she doesn't do all the time, but it's fucking beautiful. Like,
yeah.
It's a beautiful record.
And, standing around in Flamingo Cantina with 15 people I didn't know, like, she launched into some of these tracks, and, like, literally, like, the whole room just stood the fuck still, and no one wanted to do anything to get out of the moment, which
you
was really
go,
interesting.
You want to go get that little hurt bunny and take it and take care of it, you know? I mean, not to be condescending toward her, because certainly, but I mean, but that's kind of what you feel like at some point. I can't even imagine seeing her live. Like, it's a raw wound, a lot of these.
Well, and to your note about the Sundays, like, I was taken by, like, I always remember, like, I have this stuck in my long-term memory, Ryan, and we've talked about this on this show before, like, kind of how guys have responded to Harriet Wheeler.
Live and when I saw them right around that time, it was on the second.
From the Sundays.
We saw the same show.
Were you at that show?
I went with a girl.
Yeah, I went with a girl.
I went with Daniel Matthews. He got laid that night, just a little aside.
I did not, and I was with a girl.
Hey.
Yeah, well,
we'll just let everybody know.
Glad you guys had a good night.
And in news from 20 years ago.
Good stuff.
But no, like, the guys were just, you know, enraptured.
You made it sound like they were just flinging themselves at the stage.
Well, I think one guy jumped up and gave her a kiss on the cheek.
Yeah,
got carted off by security, and he did not give a fuck because he got to kiss her.
But I guarantee it was a collective swoon with it, you know, with every male.
Yeah.
And
but I guarantee you there are many, like, sensitive young English major boys that are just you'll think she is just the shit right now.
No, I'm sure that that's true. Anyway, maybe we should. You guys want to do a track?
I'd love to.
Let's do the title track. Other than death. dial up the video for that one because, well, yeah, we can go into what it looks like and whatnot. No,
it's a beautiful song.
It's a beautiful song.
First and foremost.
There's a lot of implied violence, but in that, like.
In the song in the video?
In the video.
In well, the visuals,
the video
too,
looks like
yes.
She's standing in either an abandoned, like, old high school gym with a bunch
like
of stuff.
A cafeteria, because there's chairs everywhere.
But there are tables, like, from a Mexican restaurant or something. I don't know. And for some reason, she's standing in, like, a middle school, like, basketball jersey uniform.
No, uniform.
Whole full uniform, yeah, with, like, knee socks and shit.
With a headband. With a white and yellow, green, like, basketball headband.
I'm thinking it was a track outfit. Just because of the words of the song.
But you would think that. But, I mean, she's got the basketball head. I don't know. But also, she's got a huge fucking shiner on one of her eyes. Like, she's got
She looks like she got beat
eye.
Up.
So anyway, but if you listen to that, like, getting to the song itself, I thought this might be a decent time to share a little snippet from the Verge review of this this tale, which was actually written during South By. And so I thought this was kind of interesting. And if you want it, you know, an idea as to sort of what the scene is like when you see, you know, you see her play, or had you seen her play?
And
this
she was week? Good live, like
yeah, she was great live, yeah, terrific.
It was just her by herself, right?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, it says, how do you quiet a crowd packing one of the many venues on Austin's raucous 6th Street? You give Julian Baker a guitar and a loop pedal, and you let her go to work. While I watched Baker's inspired set Thursday night in a standing room only bar, I found myself picking out all the sounds I shouldn't have been able to hear. The ice and the liquor and the bartenders were shaking a few dozen feet away. The whir of the building's ventilation, the cold ping of somebody's smartphone. The room was otherwise silent, giving up every inch of space to Baker's clean guitar melodies and her incandescent voice. She played a church the night before, her guests sitting in pews beneath the yawning ceiling. Her Thursday set was proof that she can turn any nondescript establishment into a place for reverence, for quiet focus and reflection. So, I don't know. Like, there's a little bit of that that probably feels like it's hyperbole.
But it's good. It's a good piece of writing, though, yeah. Actually. Like, it sets up in your mind, like, exactly.
Well, one of the things that really distinguishes this record for me is, like, she's got, like, an amazing tone. That
vocally or
no, her guitar tone.
Her guitar tone's amazing, but also she's got a lot of interesting things that she
does.
Well,
that too.
Vocally.
I mean, no, she's an excellent singer. But she's not necessarily traditional, but no, I kept, you know, it's not like she's shredding or anything, but she has a really interesting tone.
Well, even when she's playing, and that's sort of a testament also to whoever engineered this record. I mean, even when she's playing acoustic, like it's distinguished and it just sounds good. I mean, it easily could. You could easily spend a lot less time and make this album sound not anywhere near as good as it does, and still have it be a great album. Like, but it sounds sonically, it's a great sound.
Yeah, hopefully that kid's not an intern anymore.
So it was an intern.
It was her buddy. Like he attended classes with her. She's at the music school at Middle Tennessee State, and he just had like a little time, so they put together like three songs in the studio at school, but he was already interning at whatever that studio is.
She had been – so, yeah, like sort of the backstory on that from what I understand is like – so she plays in a band called Forrester, which used to be called Starkiller.
But it turns out there's an EDM band called that.
Right, yeah. So but there are all those guys – all those guys are still back in Memphis. And she's in Middle Tennessee State in Murfreesboro, a different part of the state. And so she had been, I guess, working in the sound lab or whatever at school, running cables and shit, and had been writing these songs on her own.
That just didn't really fit with her regular band.
Yeah. And anyway, it turns out that like this buddy of hers said, hey, by the way, we've got a little bit of time.
Yeah,
do you have any songs? Like literally, that's what he asked her.
Yeah, he hadn't even heard her shit. He's just like, yeah, we got a little time to kill. You want to like lay down some tracks? And so he liked them. And
well,
he was an intern at this bigger deal studio and was like, let's see if we can get you in. And then he did it and bada boom, bada bing.
But anyway, yeah. So, I do think that there's like the title track is reflective of Sprained Ankle, by the way. I don't think we've actually said what the name of the record is.
Well, that's also the name of the song that we just covered.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, and I think that like thematically, it feels like a lot of like it, you know, there aren't vast departures on this record in terms of like tone, like
no,
to your point, tone and consistency of the way the delivery and so on and so forth.
There aren't, and but one of the cool way about it's arranged, and normally it might start blending in and getting a little samey for me, but they do a really good, they do an interesting job. Well, once you get invested in the lyrics, then you're just like invested in everything, but they do a really good job of, as far as you can vary it up with the acoustic songs, with the more ethereal songs, with the more straight ahead stuff, mm-hmm. like they do vary.
I mean, there's
that
nothing
up.
Super up tempo, but they change up sort of the arrangements a little bit.
Toward the end of the record, there's a couple of songs where they definitely do that more. You know, the last song has a piano on it, and
sure.
In fact, this is one of the few albums, if not the only album that I think we reviewed, where I think that's the strongest songs on the album are the last three.
Oh, that's
songs.
Interesting.
Well, I think the whole album is incredibly strong, but those last three songs just kill for me.
Well, and I don't know if you heard anything about the there's some interesting like looped conversation that happens in one of the last tracks, which apparently it turns out was kind of a complete
happy
accident. But yeah. It sounds like, you know, this record is just sort of full of happy accidents in a way. Like she just sat down to do something very like the fact that she got to record it was not intended, and the fact that she had these things that didn't sound like they'd belong to her band.
Well, a lot of that, like, I think, maybe comes from, like, you know, being talented and
sure.
being 20 and not really knowing your limits.
Right.
Well, yeah. I looked at that Stereo Gum article that I read. You know, the woman that conducted the interview had listened to this record a bunch, and then she talked to her on the phone, and she was like, she sounded really, like, upbeat and chirpy. And I was like, like, why is that? And then she was like, oh, yeah, because she's 20, and a music journalist wants to talk to her about her music.
Yeah, that same article, and she made a point of saying that she addressed her as ma'am.
I know, I remember that, too. Yeah, that was funny.
She's endearing. Yeah, you just want to protect that baby bird. You want to play one more?
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll go to an intermission. After this.
Yep. Let's do one of the tracks that I got a chance to see her play live was Everybody Does. A couple of things occurred to me about that track. One is that, like, I think that basic sentiment is pretty common among 20-year-olds, like, or just like people who are just like trying to figure out who they are. Like, if you figure out who I am, then it's never gonna work or whatever, and they're super impatient, but at the same time, ballsy enough to like just tell everybody.
Well, she just came straight out and just like,
I haven't even really noticed much of the lyrical content of this record, and it's only because I just listened to it today, but I can tell that it doesn't. So the little snippets that I've, you know, caught here and there, I can tell that, like, she knows what she's doing. She's got, like, the trifecta. She writes good songs. She's got a really fantastic voice that's, you know, pretty unique. And lyrically,
what does she say? Like, you're gonna run. It's okay. Everybody else does. But what she say? I'm a.
It's like
flaming ball of wreckage.
I'm a pile of filthy garbage.
Pile of filthy garbage. Yeah. Right.
And so like lyrically, that was the other thing. And you've touched on this, but we really haven't talked about it to a great deal. Like, I was like, A, there are no saxophones. And
always
B,
a bonus for Shane.
And B, like lyrically, it's pretty like. It's raw but pretty intricate, and I was like, I wanted to get your take on, like, you know, lyrically, what were the songs that you connected to?
Well, the whole that kind of with me, it's more than I'm gonna have to say. I listened to this record many, many, many times, probably six or seven times. I love it. I mean, obviously, like, it's my dance jam of the year. So
sure.
Like, I wouldn't say that lightly, but
it's your dance jam of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're like slam dancing with your wife in the living room.
No, you know, it's like CNC music, whatever said earlier.
Yeah.
So, but I just, little things would come. Like, there are a couple of songs where, like, one, she talks about, like, being on a table in a hospital. Like, I think it's an operating room. One, she talks about wrapping her car around a telephone pole. And one, she talks about wishing that she let the pavement swallow her up. I want to know if there was a precipitating automobile accident that happened, because a lot of the album also is about, obviously, about breakup stuff and stuff like that. But I feel like there might be and then she has one song where she's, and forgive me, it doesn't all blend together. I didn't write down these lyrics like I normally would, about, I have more whiskey than blood in my veins at this point.
Right.
And then there's one about, keeping the cabinet locked, like as though don't get into the pills kind of stuff. I mean, it's some heavy fucking shit.
Yeah.
But that's hence why I say you just want to go pick up that little wounded bird and take care of it. And I don't mean that in a condescending way. It's just, that's what you walk away
she's
from.
She's kind of waifish too. Like, and young looking, you know?
Yes. All of the above. Yes, that's true. But I mean, just emotionally, like it's a weighty album, but it's also it's not hard to listen to, you know, because her melodies are so strong, you know, and the tones are so cool. Like, that's all you really pay attention to at first. It's not like some tortured folk artist where their lyrics are front and center and there's the melodies and are in the back.
Right. Yeah, and the songs are all basically structured that you'll pay attention to the lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, she's tortured, but you would never apply that word to her music as you would a tortured artist.
One of the pieces that I read said something to the effect of, like, that, and maybe it was the Stereo Gum thing, because I read that too, but I don't remember exactly which, but one of them said that the interviewer in this case was really tempted to, like, ask questions about
what happened.
But ultimately decided that, like, it's actually kind of better if you leave a little bit of that to the imagination, and I agree. But the other thing I was going to add is, like, she does say in one of these articles, and maybe it was that one too, that, like, there are several songs that are essentially kind of about the same.
That's what I wonder, like, about the car accident, because something that gets lost in especially really vulnerable sounding songs like this is a lot of times a writer will write from a first person perspective, but not about themselves. But it sounds like it's about themselves because they're writing from that first person perspective. So they're not necessarily about her, or they could be composite things. You know, there could be a lot of different elements that are going on to these kind of lyrics. We just assume that they're coming from places in her life. However, having said that, I do think that there might have been a car crash involved, where, you know, there's more to the story. I mean, if you go back and listen, there are definitely a couple of songs where, you know, like this shit that I just said.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right. Well,
intermission time.
Yeah. Who's got the break?
I got it. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Okay.
So today we are going, and this is a new video too.
You've been like grinning like the Cheshire Cat.
Well, because honestly, like I don't. Okay, this is a song by the Joy Formidable. Decent band. I think they're Welsh. This is a pretty good song, but this video,
it's something special.
It's hard to explain whether you're going to hate me or love me after you see it. But there are lots of dancing men in it. But so I play dancing men video for you a lot. Like I've just
Kevin picked a dancing men video.
Did I?
LK.
Well, oh, that's true. Where will these guys sleep? And Ryan's like, I think they're pretty much okay with laying down anywhere.
This is more similar to the Chavez video that I showed you, just not quite as, you know, with all the dick dancers. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's some more of those in this video. So.
Oh,
that's exciting.
Yeah.
Certainly.
So what's the name of the song?
It's called Last Thing on My Mind. But we'll go ahead and watch it. And we'll come back in a minute, and I'll figure out if I'm fired from the show or not.
By the Joy Formidable?
By the Joy Formidable, yeah. We'll be right back. Enough butts for you?
Earl, are there ever enough butts, Shane?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
this would actually put it to the test. That was a lot of naked dancing dudes.
That's true.
I was like, and then every, like, I don't know, like,
every so often, like, one that was just, well, like a kind of chubby, like, guy with a acoustic
Jimi
guitar,
Hendrix.
And then Jimi Hendrix. Yeah.
Well, no, like, well, I was just gonna say, like, every once in a blue moon, band, like. Yeah,
Actual band in there?
Well, the gal, right? Like,
she would just show her face. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like just a cut of her face, and then they're like, nope, back to butts. Like, no, that's where we're going. Yeah.
Butts and blurry dicks.
Butts and blurred dicks. Well, it gets a little more explicit toward the end of it, but, and at one point, like, the only thing that I hadn't liked before, but when I saw it again, like, it's really, really tongue in cheek. I mean, like,
I gathered as much.
Yeah, but it, we're
cheeks.
Yeah,
tongues and cheeks.
where like it shows her eye that says sex, like in her the whites of her eye
or whatever, in the reflection.
Yeah. And at first I was rolling my eyes, but then I'm like, oh, you know what? Like, this is, there's something in there. The song is, The song is decent. It's, you know what it reminds me of? Curve. Like a little more
industrial,
a little more, yeah, a little more chunky, less
Curve was
like kind of gauzy,
pretty chunky. Like, if you go back and listen to their stuff, like, it was a little gauzier.
There was like a sonic sheen to Curve.
But it had similar sort of.
But I get where you're coming from.
Like, and also, like, some of the harder, like, Darling Bud stuff we just listened to. Like, it's like early 90s.
Yeah,
like. Alternative.
Her voice reminded me a little bit of Shirley Manson.
Yeah, okay, garbage, too. I put that in there.
That.
Yeah.
I hadn't made that connection. I was like, and it sounded like at least a little bit reminiscent of something.
But that song's definitely a grow on you song. Hey, it's a grower, not a shower, in relation to that video. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little distracting to concentrate on the song.
On the song, because it's all of that, like all, nearly naked men dancing.
Yeah, it might be the gayest thing I've ever seen.
It's pretty gay.
Well, yeah.
So it would seem. Not that there's anything wrong.
But go
for it, fellas. Like,
but it's for her to enjoy. I mean, it's very,
I know,
very
that's the impression
obvious.
I
it's very
that,
obvious. It's not. Yeah. You know. It's just. It's because we're in a garage full of men.
I probably know some fellas that would also enjoy that video.
I know fellas and. Non-fellas.
I am going to call it a stark contrast from the material we've been covering tonight.
Well, that's why I decided to play it for you.
Well, thanks, Shane.
You're welcome. Just yes.
Wash off the ingenue.
Well, yeah. No, it's like taking the magic eight ball and you shake it, then you gotta wait for it to flow back. That's what we just did. We just
and
shook it.
A little triangle pops up that says, what are you doing?
Like, well,
what the hell is this, dude? Right,
exactly. My eyes.
I honestly did a little soul searching whether I wanted to subject it to it or not, and I wouldn't have had the song not been half decent. And the song is half decent. It's not my favorite song, but it's got good hooks in there. And
it's not bad.
It's not a bad song.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. It is hard to concentrate on the song when you're
just the barrage of undulating.
Did you guys notice at one point when the guy, like, he's dressed basically at the Antonio Banderas wears in Desperado, it's like all black and he's got sunglasses on and he's doing like the male pole dance, and behind him there's a banner that says the Joy Formidable Pole Dancing Competition.
Oh no, I didn't see that.
I did not know.
There were lots of lots of little breadcrumbs in there to follow, I guess. I don't know. Easter eggs, as they say.
Isn't that what they say in video games?
Easter egg is something. Well, it would be. Yeah, it would be a surprise. So I guess
they planted it in there for the true fans to
discover.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, as I've said before, and I will countlessly say again, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And yeah. Let's go back and listen to Julian Baker.
Okay. Interesting little nugget, getting back into Julian Baker.
The melancholy.
Yes, after that frivolous romp into whatever land.
It was a romp.
Illness.
Palate cleanser.
Yeah. It was raining men on this podcast.
It was raining men.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, we've talked a little bit but now about kind of her, yeah, sort of how this record came together. I don't know. Was there anything
a lot of serendipity in that whole situation, like just kind of things working out a certain way?
Right. And it's still melancholy. You would think that, like, maybe it'd be a little bit more upbeat.
Well, maybe the next one will be. Yeah. Like, be like, holy shit, people like me.
Hey, it all. Hey, what was it? The, yeah. The Sally Field yes. sophomore release.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll ask Shane, like, I'll ask you, anything that surprised you, like, you said that you've listened to it several times too. Like, you know, was there anything that that maybe upon early listens that you thought was a departure? I mean, we talked a little bit.
I don't think there's anything that was a departure. It definitely it definitely became more real to me once I really started being able to understand like what she was saying. I mean, I don't know that there's anything that was a departure.
I think it's surprisingly mature. If you know.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I don't know any 20-year-olds who are writing like this.
Well, you bring up a really good point, right? Because we're, you know, the young 20s that we see are, like, typically pop stars. And it's such saccharine shit that they're
that they didn't
out
have
there
any
that,
hand
like,
in writing.
Well, right. You do
often.
Have,
yeah.
You do have writers that are, you know, early, but that are in their early 20s that write stuff this good. I mean, you know, people like, you know, like Bright Eyes was writing stuff like, you know,
well, and how old was Morrissey Marr when they started?
Morrissey was later. Johnny Marr was 19 when their first album came out. But, I mean, so, yeah, put that in your corncob pipe and smoke it, motherfuckers. I mean, that's ridiculous. But you do, you see that, but typically, like, there's a huge, we forget about, like, there's a huge gulf in between 18 and 19, 19 to 20. By the time you're 22, which sounds, you know, not too far away to my ears, there's a lot of life has happened, like, in those 2 years, a lot of writing. And to be so singularly focused and so talented at this, at 20, which means the songs, I mean, I think
she probably wrote most of them when she was 19.
Well, I think she started recording this or came out, like, right after she turned 20. So she was, like, 19 and shit.
Yeah, that's just wild. And, you know, good on her.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you mentioned Morrissey, because that's another artist that comes up in this guy's piece, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I won't read the whole thing, but it basically says that there, he says, like Moz, Baker isn't without a sense of humor about herself. I wish I could write songs about anything other than death, which is the first line from the title track. It isn't the sort of thing that you say unless you're self-aware. And so I think to your point, Ryan, like, yeah, there is a certain maturity that is unbecoming, or like, at
but
least
it also
unusual
feels,
for a 20-year-old.
It also feels unforced.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, she just had enough space to kind of, these things just to kind of come out of her.
Yeah. I mean, I get that about the more, like, at first when, but the more that I think about it, like, that there's a self-awareness and there is a sense of humor there, and you are right. I definitely picked up on it. You can hear that in certain places. It's not as, Morrissey's got the arched eyebrows pretty much always, even at his, like, most morose.
Well,
and this is definitely, like, slit your wrists, more open wound
sure.
to me.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, at least the impression that I get is Morrissey is always, it's kind of intentionally a little standoffish.
Right, I was going to say at arm's length.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, fellas, should we do one more track?
Let's do one more song.
Now, Shane, you were saying that you were fond of the last three tracks on the record. Is there one that jumped out at you that you wanted?
Well, I liked, I guess it's I'll Rejoice, but Vessels, I think the second to the last song is the one I like the most.
Okay, so let's give a listen to Vessels, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
To be infinite.
another little snippet from the Verge piece from this guy who saw her play a couple of shows at South By. He said, at one point, I watched a husky young man in a beanie ask three men behind him to be quiet. He did it in a way that suggested a kind of moral obligation, ensuring some unspoken bond remained intact. This is Baker's power. She makes you want to fight for silence, which is an interesting
idea. That's
an
album name, though, that probably hasn't happened yet.
Fight for Silence.
Yeah, right.
That's actually a pretty decent album name, Ryan.
Yeah. So anyway, but Shane, you suggested this song.
Oh,
so
I just think it's beautiful. It has a well, number one, I think her voice sounds the prettiest on this one.
It is very pretty,
and
there's it's a
like,
little Jeff Buckley-esque, I think.
Well,
and
it kind
of
is.
See, yeah. I kind of thought of like the quieter moments of Jeff Buckley at different points of this record, and like a less majestic Band of Horses.
That's not a
criticism.
Sure.
But it's interesting because like we automatically, especially when we're doing the show, I think that we're geared to try to like pick out things that enable us
to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, we should at least address the thing that we were talking about or going to talk about
the last track on the record.
About the kind of kismet that happened on the last track on the record,
which I did not pay attention to at all. I'm unfamiliar with this, but both of you guys know about it.
Well, I had listened to most of this record and then like read up a little bit about it and then read that interview where she actually talked about it. And it's kind of a cool story.
I guess I just glossed over that because I read the same interview.
Well, so some of the themes in this record, I mean, in addition to car wrecks and relationships breaking up or whatever, but there, you know, she talks about her faith and religion and, you know, I guess some waffling.
Not
there.
In an overt way.
No, you noticed too much.
Well, that's no. You do like there are things. There was a lot of times in the record where I was curious. I didn't get to go back there and really research it too much. But you tell like there are a couple of songs where it seems like she's talking directly to God in the songs through what she says. So
but more like she's struggling with her faith, but she wants to believe and that kind of thing.
But there's some direct like, you know, rhetorical conversations with God.
What just happened?
Anyhow, so what happened was her preamp to her piano, which I think is it the only song that has piano on it. The last track,
correct?
She ran her piano through a preamp, and randomly the thing started picking up like a evangelical. Raving preacher on
it
like
happens.
AM.
It's always preachers. I've been in so many rehearsals when you have passive pickups or active pickups. They pick up. It's always preachers.
Yeah, this like real firebrand, preacher, and she was like, it just kind of sounded cool.
So. Yeah, she was. But she said it's real holy roller shit. But like, she was like, it just was this weird moment, and we just decided to leave it in, and it kind of makes sense. Like,
well, and the interviewer like thought was like, oh, where'd you get that? Well, we didn't get it. It just showed up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so, yeah, thanks for giving me your 2 cents on this record, you guys. Thanks for recommending it.
Like, yeah, it's one that'll stick around.
Who's got the last song?
Yeah,
I do.
What are we listening to? Tell us what we're listening to.
It's a little bit of a change of pace. Like, I mean,
is it as much of a change of pace as the Joy Formidable?
You be the judge. It's Nathaniel Ratcliffe, S.O.B.
I'm gonna need someone to help me. I'm gonna need somebody's hand. I'm gonna need someone to hold me down. I'm gonna need someone to care. I'm gonna rise and shake my body. I'll start cooling out my hair. I'm gonna cover myself with the ashes of you, and nobody's gonna give a damn. Son of a bitch, give me a drink. One more night, but it's can't be me. Son of a bitch, if I can't get clean, I'm gonna drink my life away.
So yeah, Nathaniel Ratcliffe, not Ratcliffe. And the Night Sweats.
Not Hawthorne.
not Nathaniel Hawthorne and the Night Strikes.
Boom, yeah. Laid it down. I should just walk away.
Yeah, yeah, drop that mic.
But not coincidentally, on Stax Records out of Memphis.
I don't know if that's a coincidence, too. I mean, other than like, I didn't know Stax Records still existed. But it definitely sounds like if it existed today, that band should be on it.
Yeah.
You know, like a rousing, like, African-American church sing-along.
Yeah, not my style. I really am not into gospel kind of stuff.
I'm not, but this is really fun.
Well, but I like that chorus a lot, so I've had a hard time. I've been familiar with that song for a few months, and I've had a hard time reconciling the two parts of it because I really don't like the verse, but I really like the chorus, but... That was a pretty damn amusing video, and it kind of tied it all together. It tied it all together.
I think it's a blast, and I don't quite know how to reconcile the fact that it also sounds a little bit like the Benny Hill theme song.
Does it?
It's like the same
yakety
tempo.
Yakety sax.
Yeah. Just like it just has – well, it has got the sax in it, and it's right around the same tempo. But I mean, obviously, this is a
that just makes me want to just overlay that song.
You do a mashup,
video. Yeah, yeah. Just,
it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, Mark. Anyway, but yeah, interesting. Like,
well, in the video, it takes place in a prison.
Yes,
and I can't tell if the band's supposed to be inmates or not.
Oh yeah, they're supposed to be inmates. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, but everybody else is wearing different. They're wearing like blue jumpsuits.
Yeah, but they're probably wearing the blue.
They're like the trustees
shirts and yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean that they're definitely part of the. I mean, like
they're
put
with
it
the band.
They would have been separated way more from the. I mean, when Johnny Cash did Folsom Prison, they were away from the prisoners a little more than sitting in the cafeteria like that. I'm pretty sure they're part of the prison. That's. Because in the beginning of it, the cops are coming for them, whatever they've done, and it's like you've been watching Nathaniel Ratliff and you know blah blah blah, and he's like I need a drink, night sweats, yeah. And he goes I need a drink, and then the next episode comes and they've been busted by the police, and they're in the prison.
Yeah, so I thought it was paying pretty clear. It was paying homage to the Blues Brothers. In my opinion,
I was thinking Quentin Tarantino.
No, I think the Blues Brothers. I think you're. Yeah, I thought the same thing.
I mean, just the way that they like introduced the band members by the name, the super of their name.
That's probably true, but like the fonts and kind of like some of the like freeze frames and whatnot. It seems like they were trying to do something in the style of Quentin Tarantino. I don't know who actually directed the thing, but I mean, it came complete with like titles and end credits and.
Yeah, and all the all of the extras that were playing inmates, they all had their own like casting name, like Snake Joe and like
oh yeah, Big Red,
and all this. There were like 40 of them, and so it came up like just slow enough where you could read everybody's name. Yeah, it was pretty
good. Good time.
Yeah, I dig that song. I don't know. That's a turn it up.
It was good. Yeah, I mean, like I said, like I really enjoy that. Well, I mean, there's no chorus to Eddie. It's gonna have to be a really shitty song with the chorus. If it's not any good, and the chorus starts, "Son of a bitch, give me a drink."
Yeah,
like you know, it's gotta be a really bad song if you're not gonna enjoy that. So, I think I definitely like that song more now having seen the video. So it's kind of the opposite of what happened earlier when I played that video for you.
Oh, and I was just turned on by all the dudes.
and you were like, I couldn't even pay attention to the song. So yes, in effect, like in a real world way, that is kind of the opposite of what happened.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Well,
who's got next week? Did you figure that out?
I have next week.
Shane was doing some homework during the show.
Well, I saw a band last, and I don't want to talk about it right now because I don't want to give it up, but I don't want this band. I don't want to do two South by bands back to back that we just saw.
Sure.
And so I was thinking, well, should I do that? Or the other thing that I wanted to do, and I've wanted to do for a little while, is we've been doing the show for almost 2 years. Or, you know, like you've been around for almost a year and a half.
He says, looking at me.
I'm looking at Mark.
What started, like April of
2014? We started like 2 weeks before Memorial Day in 2014.
So that'd be May?
Yeah, so May.
Okay.
Yeah, so almost 2 years. And I have yet to have picked a jazz record.
I knew you were you'd mentioned
we
that.
We talked
before.
About it last week, mm-hmm. But it's because Ryan, like, I love jazz. I listen to a lot of jazz. Kevin, I know you like jazz.
I do like jazz.
I don't hate all jazz. Like, you know, there's
that's a ringing endorsement. Well, okay, I mean, well, that's my, okay. So
before was it you, about time was it
before that, like, you before you say that? That's actually, I finally figured out a jazz album that I felt suitable for Ryan Newsom.
Okay,
and that's Time Out by Dave Brubeck.
Okay,
that was just coming out of your mouth, which is an album that I'm familiar with two very notable exceptions. Not familiar with the album, of course. Everybody knows Take Five, and there are two notable exceptions to that record, but the rest of it, like, I really don't know. And I love Dave.
It's
Brubeck.
Time Out, not About Time.
Like, it's Time Out.
Time Out. Yeah. By Dave Brubeck. Okay. Yeah. Well, I can get behind
that.
Well,
he was experimenting with different time signatures. Well, we can talk all about that next week. I mean, I've listened to the album before, but I'm not super duper familiar with it. And I felt like I'm not going to throw you a Coltrane record, but at least we could open the jazz door.
Miles Davis's fusion period.
That's me banging my... I was going to say Ryan, without having Ryan bang his head on the floor, but if you give me some Miles Davis fusion...
I just wear a helmet.
Yeah. It's me banging my head on the
floor. No, I feel the same way. I don't love it. It's not my cup of tea either, but like Brubeck's perfect choice. Like, looking forward to it.
Cool. So we'll do that in 7 days. I was going to say 2 and 2 like Chuck Woolery used to on the Dating Game. We'll be back.
It wasn't the Dating Game. It was Love Connection.
Oh, Love Connection. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob Eubanks was the Dating Game, right?
No.
Newlywed
Bob
show.
Eubanks was a newlywed.
Can we talk about Gene Rayburn?
Match Game.
Yes.
I was going to say I'm not familiar with it. We've got just a little far outside of my knowledge of daytime talk show
our
hosts.
Dad would be schooling us on all this stuff.
This week we're going to talk about a new record. Next week we're going to talk about a blank. That's what
we're talking about.
Anyway, the tall skinny Mike.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we'll talk plenty about Gene Rayburn and many, many other things as we take a trip in the Wayback Machine when you next join us for Dave Brubeck.
That's true. Next week we'll do Dave Brubeck. As for now, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Somebody Likes It.